1 week and speak in French, talk in French, jump in French, play in French, stay with them and speak French the whole week so that they can live in French. And we think that this is going to help them to think differently about the subject, and they're going to start liking the subject, and it's going to motivate them to keep the subject. So we wrote a proposal. I wrote the proposal with the students, and we submitted to the Fédération Internationale des Professeurs de Français, the International Federation for Teachers of French, and we went through.
Very nice.
In Africa, and we got the funding. It was 5,000 euros. So we were able to put it into a reality. Our first camp, which was in 2014, was about 50 students with our five teachers, our five facilitateurs, as we call them, animateurs. And then we went and we ran the French camp. We went to the source of the Nile. It's beautiful. It's wild. It's the environment is still conserved. You can visit the forest, tropical forest. You live in the wild. You enjoy nature. You can take walks, and you're doing everything in French.
Mm.
And we cook in French. We play in French. We sing songs in French. We do campfire in French. Fashion shows in French. By the end of the week, we do a talent show in French. That's why we call the camp Cadre de Vie en Français. It's a framework for life in the French style.
That sounds fantastic. Now, you started in 2014.
Yes.
And it's still going on.
And it's still going on. So we've marked our fifth birthday, and we thought that this is a good timing for it to be assessed and documented. And I wrote a proposal, and I went through. And I got this funding to come to Connecticut. And it's amazing because it was least expected, but with God.
Very nice. So I'm glad you're here. Yeah. And I'm glad that this is all working out. You touched on the idea that at the end you're supposed to have a book.
Yes, yes.
What will you include in the book?
So I'm going to invite, I'm encouraging the facilitators who we work with, each of them to write a chapter. So we're going to write about why do we organize CAVIF, why CAVIF. Then we're going to take each activity that we do and try to explain how you plan for it, how it takes place, what the children say about it, whether they like it, what are the weaknesses, what should we improve in future. So activities like the song, the French song in class, poetry outdoors, campfire and fashion show, excursions on the Nile, cooking in French in class, games, word games, number games, etc. So many activities that we take and we use them as a base, a fun base, so that we teach French differently. We make the learners to learn differently, to be interested in learning French, because we are teaching French in a peculiar context. We have a language policy in Uganda. We are an English speaking country.
Okay.
Officially, English is an official language.
Mm-hmm.
And our students, when they come in class, they've already got their maternal language.
Right.
And for example, me, I have my Runyankore. I come with Runyankore. Then I learn English at school. And then after learning English, I have to learn French. So French for us is not, for most of us, it's not the second language. It is a third language. And you're learning that in a context where everybody knows that English has gone global. It is the global language. So it is an uphill task for the teacher to convince the students that, look, we're doing something important. We're doing something that's meaningful in the job market, that, you know, you can get a good job out there, because there are many neighboring countries which are still Francophone in Uganda.
Mm. So by the time you finish this book, your hope is that people who get to read the book will have a understand that there's a different approach.
Yes.
And that they'll actually be excited about it.
Yes.
And encouraged.
Yes, yes.
And that you'll, in a sense, maybe shape, reshape. Could I use the word revolutionize?
I know.
At least some aspects of how people approach
in
learning
the French.
French
context, I yeah. fear using the revolution because it could bring the guillotine.
Change. Well, I shouldn't
change.
Say cut that out, should I?
No, It's okay. Even the most democratic countries, they've had their points of revolution.
Point, guillotine, cut. We're not moving away from it. All right, okay. Well, that sounds fantastic.
So we hope that our book is going to explain to teachers of French that you can teach differently. It's going to make students understand that you don't have to do French only in class, that you can take it outside class and enjoy it and live a moment of pleasure while you are learning.
Having an enjoyable time while you're learning.
Yes.
What a fantastic concept.
Yes.
That sounds great. Well, okay, so that's your background, how you... got here to UConn.
Yes.
The other part of the show is ask our guests each time, what is it that you do as far as your faith life? So how would you describe yourself as a person of faith?
I am a born-again Christian from the Anglican Church. I am a committed Christian, a practicing Christian. I have faith that what we're doing in every sport that the Lord has blessed us can change somebody, can be a blessing to somebody, that you do not have to be able to do the Sermon on the Mount in order to change people's lives. You can do it in your simple way, in your daily activities, in the connection that you have, in the life that you're living, in the community, in your family, the way you are helping those who live with you, the way you participate in community activities. I go to an Anglican church, the Church of the Resurrection, Bugolobi, which is under the Diocese of Kampala in the province of Church of Uganda.
Mm.
And therefore, in our church, I am on the parish council. And that means that I have a stewardship role to play, that I'm expected to be helping the church in conceiving its policies, in seeing that its vision and mission and objectives and goals in the program, in its strategic plan, that they are implemented. I am on many committees, but I concentrate mostly on the education committee, where I'm the chair or coordinator. And as the chair of the education committee, I also have the responsibility of being the chair of board of governors for the church school.
Hmm.
It's called Bethel Rock Community School. And our simple slogan in the school with the children is Bethel Rock, you rock.
Do you have it translated in French as well underneath?
No, for the children,
right.
It's either in English or then in the local language.
Mm-hmm. Mm. So you have a school at your church.
How did you come to open
a school at your church?
It started off as a community initiative because in Uganda during the early 1980s up to 1985, we had a civil war going on. And at the end of the civil war, there were so many children. Our church is near a community estate, housing estate of about 3,000 people living in flats. And around the flats, near the market, there were children who were going to the garbage heap to look for food. And others were just wandering around with no purpose in life because they had lost their dear ones. Others had walked from the countryside coming to Kampala, the capital city, hoping to get small jobs as babysitters or as mechanic helps. And they never got, because this was just after the war. So there was a situation of children who were really desperate. And the church members at that time decided that it cannot be in front of the church, just next door to the church. It's not proper. So they brought in the children. And these children, some of them had been out of school for 5 years, so they were outgrowing the early age of learning, and they were illiterate at 15, 16, 17, 18. So they brought them in, and they gave them an accelerated literacy program, and they managed to do their exams. Some of them,
wow.
Yes, some of them got very good grades. Hmm. And from 1989, when the school started to have its first exams, up to now, we've worked with about 3,000 students who've seen through the different levels of education. Some have become teachers, some are nurses, some are lawyers, some, there's even a doctor, yes, we're in touch with them, social workers, and some of them have even started like worship groups and fellowships. And they're preaching. They're preaching in the community.
So the school started out as a way to help children who were orphaned.
Yes.
During the war.
Either orphaned or in very, very needy circumstances. Because you can be a child who has a grandfather or a grandmother, or you're living with your mother in the suburbs, in the slums, in the slums of our area. And you're as worse off, as terribly off as the orphan. So we wanted to bring those children to come to at least education, have education. But we also wanted to use education as a ministry. Because when we reach out to the children, we're touching a family. And when you touch a family, you never know what can happen. A real example is this family of a Muslim parent whose child was coming to our school, and the child was preaching in the family, and they understood, and they've come to church, and they've converted to Christianity. And therefore, it is a way of using education as a ministry also. Mm. We started because of the dire circumstances of the need of these children. But it has also given us a chance for some of us to give back to the community, to link what we are trained for in the professional life to our daily life. As I go through the reports of this school, as I prepare for Parents' Day, as I prepare for strategic planning meeting for the school, I am reutilizing the things, the capacity that I've been trained for at the university, but I'm using it for another purpose of serving God in my daily life.
Well, you know, that brings us to what the show is really all about at its core, which is where is the intersection of a person's faith life and their everyday life? And so you've sort of touched on that by showing the overlap of how, you know, you're trained as a university professor. You're one who obviously loves education. And of course, you're one who loves the church. And so and at the end of that explanation, you sort of wrapped it all together. I'm wondering how, do you think that there's been any sort of a conscious decision that you maybe have come to through sort of prayerful discernment that teaching was not only a job for you, but maybe even a vocation? Or maybe a second part to that question would be whether or not you came to it as a vocation, do you feel that your faith informs how you teach and what you've decided to do with your ability to teach French?
That is a very interesting question, and I could go on and on and on and on. But just to give a small slice of how my life at the university informs what I do as part of my faith, I'll talk about how we run the school, how we mobilize. Our school, the church school, Bethel Rock, the school which rocks. Our school is based on mobilization with friends. We have friends, ambassadors of hope. That is a faith-based NGO. Its headquarters are in Canada. And our friends in Canada mobilize through the church. They contribute, they send to Uganda. And then our church also gives a contribution like for food and buying clothes and uniforms and shoes and socks for the children, sweaters. That one we do through the church. They provide us the money for salaries for teachers, and then in a way we bring the two together so that we can continue working in the school environment. How is this a translation of what I'm doing at the university? It's because at the university, when I learn how to write a proposal, I write proposals for the school. When I'm mobilizing, I'm doing mobilization for funds, for donors at the university, I am learning skills which I utilize also for the school. For example, just recently before I came on the 29th of September, we were doing a fundraising for the school because now we've been running for 30 years. And surely after 30 years, you want to grow from a literacy program into a school unit. And you can't do that within the church premises. So we've got to go out and get school premises so that we can really rock, you know.
Yes.
And in order for that to happen, we have to buy premises. We have to set up a whole structure of management and administration for a school. And in this fundraising, we realize that we cannot do it on our own strength. It has to be by faith. It has to be by prayer. It has to be through touching the hearts of many people in the community. If there are people who are listening out there and they're interested in supporting this school, Bethel Rock Community School, you can get in touch with the chapel, the Episcopal, the St. Mark at Yukon Campus, and we can see how we can contribute to making this school to becoming now a real community school, to graduate from the literacy program and become a community school. My training as a teacher, my learnings in putting up a curriculum, in educational policies, in educational management, I have powered all that into looking after this school. I've been insisting on, for example, the basic things, having a bank account. There was no bank account before I started working with the school, running reports, doing fundraising events every year, having parents' meetings, student meeting at end of every year. These were things which in the literacy program you could not concentrate on them because you're just trying to get the children to be literate and to get them to fit into the formal education system. But now we're getting to the intersection where we're seeing that these children deserve now growing into a formal structure of a school. And that demands a lot because our municipality is very demanding when it comes to the conditions and to standards that you have to fulfill to run as a school.
How many students?
Right now in the church we've got 150.
Mm.
150 children. Then if you add on those ones who we have sent to do their final primary leaving examination, when they get to the final year, the seventh year, they have to go to a recognized center.
Oh.
So those ones, the 50, we've sent them to a recognized center. So we usually have about 200, 210.
Yeah.
We continue paying tuition fees for those who are doing the exams. This week, as I speak, by the way, they are doing their final primary exams. So I'm talking to Christians out there. Pray for my children of Bethel Rock Community School so that they can perform well. We have a senior program, senior secondary, a high school program, but they have to score well in order to be taken on into the high school program.
Wow, that's fantastic. So that's a fairly nice sized school. That's
yes.
So what are the, so I'm only familiar, for example, I could only talk halfway intelligently about the American school system. Compared to the American school system, what would be the grade levels that you have?
I can also talk half intelligently about the American.
Well, maybe together we can figure it out.
But I know the children who come to us, obviously our children in Bethel Rock, they don't do nursery school. They come to P1, primary one, primary one, primary two, primary three, primary four, primary five, and six. Mm. Then they go to do the exam for primary seven. Mm. Then after the exam of primary seven, they start secondary school, which is high school. So you can work it out into the American system.
So do the high school, you teach high school students as well, or only the primary school level?
No, we only teach the primary school level. Right. When they get to high school, they are on our program for tuition, for the tuition fees, but it's the schools now which take care. They still come to us on Saturdays. Uh-huh. We still insist that they have to come for spiritual education. We do counseling. We look at their spiritual needs. We try to connect with the schools if there's need to connect, if there's issues of discipline. Dealing with adolescents, as you can you can imagine.
Yeah, it's always fun.
It's not as easy as Bethel Rock, you rock.
Right.
So we are dealing with issues of early pregnancies, of relationships, of... In our community, we are daily struggling with HIV, AIDS. It's either the children who... in the family where the parent has become sick, or it is children who have become orphans because the parent, the mother and the father passed away, and they're staying with a grandmother, and the grandmother is getting old. Somehow it's the second cycle of the effects of AIDS. And therefore we try to be as near as we can. But as you're working with the school and you also have the daily activities of the school, obviously it's not easy. We are looking for volunteers out there. If there are volunteers who are coming to places like Uganda who can help in working with adolescents and counseling them, especially counseling adolescents to stay in school, because there's a big threat of wanting to go and do small jobs, becoming a boxer, serving in a nightclub, I don't know what, things like that, which take them away from school. And once we've lost a child from school, it's very, very, very painful for our school, because we've then lost all those years of input.
Well, a lot of what I hear and what you're saying is that a lot of what you do is bring hope to people.
Oh, yeah. When you visited the families where we get the children from, when you've talked with the grandparents, and most times it's grandparents, a few of the ladies are the mothers working in markets and in small businesses. It's very difficult to imagine how they go on from one day to another. And therefore, when we see a child being able to talk to parents, to change the way they're parenting, to allow him to do or to allow her to do homework as other children do, we are changing from the very needy to the hopeful ones. My children have been singing that we hope that our tomorrow is going to be better than today.
That's a really wonderful way to end. I'm so glad that you gave us your time today, Edith, and I'm so glad that you traveled all the way from Uganda to be with us here at UConn. This was a great conversation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, too.
Everyone, I'm the Reverend Brian Blair. I'm the priest at St. Mark's Episcopal Chapel here on the campus of UConn, and you're listening to Crossroads, the show where we ask our guests each time about the intersection of their faith life and their everyday life on WHUS Stores 91.7 FM. Flag around.